All right, ready for another deep dive? This time, we got a kind of crazy coincidence, two separate cases, and get this, both with defendants named Oxendine.
You can't make this stuff up. It is kind of wild.
But while coincidences aside, both these cases actually highlight some super important legal principles, especially when it comes to proving manslaughter.
Yeah, definitely. This is stuff that any lawyer or anyone even remotely interested in law needs to get their head around.
So let's jump right into the first case, Oxendine v. State. This one's pretty heavy. We're talking about a 6-year-old boy, Jeffrey Jr., who suffers like two separate abdominal injuries.
Oh, man.
First, he's hurt by his mom's boyfriend, a guy named Tyree. And then, sadly, he's injured again by his own father, Oxendine. Jeffrey Jr. doesn't make it. And so both Tyree and Oxendine, they're charged with manslaughter.
Okay, so this is where it gets interesting, right? Because the law has this thing called the but-for rule of causation. Basically, it asks, but for Oxendine's actions, would the child have died?
So it's not as simple as he beat the kid, kid died, case closed. There's more to it.
Way more. It's not about whether Oxendine, you know, contributed to the situation. It's about whether his actions were the direct cause of death.
I see. So, like, what if the kid was already, like, fatally injured from the first injury?
Exactly. And to complicate things even more, the medical testimony in this case was kind of a mess. One doctor couldn't even say for sure which injury caused the fatal bleeding.
Okay.
Nope. And then another doctor said the first injury from Tyree was the underlying cause of death. But even he couldn't say for sure if that second injury from Oxendine, like, actually sped up the kid's death.
So, a lot of unknowns. What did the court do with all that uncertainty?
Well, this is where acceleration comes into play. To get a manslaughter conviction, the prosecution needs to prove, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the defendant's actions actually accelerated the victim's death. It's not just making a bad situation worse. It's got to be that the second injury actively shortened the child's life.
That makes sense. So did they manage to prove that?
They couldn't. Not definitively.
Wow. So what happened?
The manslaughter conviction tossed out. The court basically said, we can't be sure that Oxendine's actions directly caused the death. It's totally possible the kid would have died anyway.
That's crazy. So he beat his son, but no manslaughter conviction because they couldn't definitively link it to the death.
Yep. Wild, right. But here's the kicker. Even though the manslaughter charge was overturned, Oxendine was still found guilty of second-degree assault.
Wait, hold on. How does that work?
It's because even though the beating might not have directly caused the death, it still obviously caused serious harm, and the law recognizes that. There's a difference between contributing to someone's death and actually being the direct cause.
So even though he's off the hook for the death, he's still held accountable for the beating.
Exactly. And it shows you how complex this whole causation thing can be. You need that direct link, and proving it, not always easy, especially when you've got medical evidence that's open to interpretation.
For sure. All right, so that's one Oxendine down, one to go. Let's move on to the second case, State v. Oxendine and Spence. This one involves a robbery gone wrong, ends in a murder.
And here's another twist. Both Oxendine and Spence, they confessed. You'd think this would be open and shut, right?
You'd think. What? So what happened? What's the catch?
Well, the prosecution decided to introduce these pretty gruesome photos into evidence. We're talking post-autopsy, the whole shebang, incisions, organs, you name it.
Whoa. Why on earth would they do that?
Yeah, the defense was not happy about it. They objected right away, saying the photos were way too prejudicial and would unfairly sway the jury.
I mean, that makes sense. But how do you actually decide if something's too prejudicial? Like, is there a test for that?
There is. It's a 3-part test. First, is the evidence relevant to the case? Second, does it actually help the jury understand the crime? And third, the big one, does its value as evidence outweigh the risk of prejudicing the jury against the defendant?
Okay, I see. So let's apply that to these photos. Were they even relevant? I mean, they had confessions.
Exactly. The cause of death wasn't even being debated. The court pretty much said the prosecution was just trying to mess with the jury's emotions with these graphic images.
So, like, shock value doesn't equal solid evidence.
Precisely. The court wasn't buying it. They said, nope. These photos are more likely to just upset the jury than actually help them understand the facts. Not allowed.
So even though they were technically related to the crime, they were out because they could unfairly bias the jury.
You got it. It's like they were saying, look, it's a brutal crime. We get it. But let's stick to the facts.
So the prosecution tried to play hardball. It backfired. Anything else go wrong in this case?
Oh, there's more. Buckle up.
Hit me. What else happened?
Remember those messed up jury instructions? Well, the judge kind of implied that being drunk could actually be a complete defense.
Oh, wow. Another twist. The jury instructions are messed up, too. It sounds like the judge said being drunk could be a get-out-of-jail-free card, which, isn't really how the law works, right?
Yeah, not usually. Jury instructions are super important. They tell the jury what the law is and how to apply it to this case.
Right.
And here, the judge made it sound like just being intoxicated, that's all it took to excuse what they did.
Wow.
And that's rarely the case, you know? Voluntary intoxication, not a free pass.
Okay, so to be clear, they confessed, they were caught red-handed, but these errors, the photos, and the jury instructions, it was enough to overturn their convictions.
Yep, both Oxendine cases, convictions overturned on appeal.
It really makes you think, huh, I mean, are these overturned convictions a sign that the system, it's working, catching its own mistakes, or is it just like a lucky break for guilty people?
That's the big question, isn't it? And it's one that legal folks are always debating. It's tough. On one hand, these cases show that appeals courts are willing to double-check things, make sure everyone gets a fair trial.
Yeah, makes sense.
Even if they admitted to it, it's a safeguard, you know?
But on the other hand, it feels like sometimes technicalities, they let people who might be guilty just slip through the cracks.
It's a tough balance, for sure. And these cases really show that tension.
They do. Hey, can we circle back to causation for a sec? Mm. I think the Oxendine v. State case, it kind of messes with that idea that if you contribute to someone's death, it automatically equals manslaughter.
Absolutely.
Like, you can't just say, oh, he beat the kid died, guilty. The prosecution, they have to show a direct line from what the defendant did to the death, right?
Straight line.
And if it's blurry, like in this case with the medical testimony, the whole case could just fall apart.
Totally. Think of it like a bathtub, right?
Okay.
It's slowly filling up with water. That's that first injury from Tyree, water levels rising. Eventually, the tub is going to overflow, right?
Right.
So then someone comes along, throws a bucket of water in. That's Oxendine's beating.
Oh, okay, I'm following.
Now, did that bucket cause the overflow? Maybe it sped it up a bit, but the tub was already overflowing anyway.
Oh, I like that. That really explains it. Oxendine did something harmful, sure, but it might not have been the thing that caused the death, and that matters to the law.
Huge difference. And it shows you how the law focuses on individual responsibility. We want to punish people for the right reasons for stuff they actually did that caused the harm.
Makes sense. Okay, let's switch back to the second Oxendine case, the one with the photos. It really brings up some interesting points about how evidence is used in court.
It does. Like, even evidence that seems super relevant, you know, like those photos can be thrown out if it's more prejudicial than probative.
So even if it's related to the crime.
Yeah. Basically, if it's going to make the jury emotional, but not actually help them decide the facts, it might be inadmissible.
So it's like the court saying, we get it, those photos are shocking, but they don't really help us figure out guilty or innocent here. And if they're just going to bias the jury, we're not allowing them.
Exactly. And this applies to all kinds of evidence, not just photos. Hearsay, character evidence, past bad acts. Just because it's like juicy or scandalous doesn't mean it gets in. Got to be a legal reason.
It's like a game, isn't it? Legal chess. Both sides trying to use the evidence to win.
Uh-huh.
But the judge is the ref, making sure everyone's playing fair.
Good analogy. And like in chess, every move matters. In the Oxendine and Spence case, the prosecution trying to use those photos, it was a risky move.
It was. They probably thought it would work, you know, get the jury on their side, but it backfired.
Big time. The court saw right through it, called them out for trying to, you know, unfairly sway the jury.
Which brings us back to fairness. In the end, that's what these cases are about, right? Making sure every defendant gets a fair trial. Facts and law, not emotional stuff or shortcuts.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's a big goal, and these cases show us that justice, it's a work in progress. Always. Absolutely. It takes all of us being, you know, involved and informed.
It also shows that the law, it's not like written in stone, you know, what might have worked years ago, like how you prove causation or what evidence you could use. It might not fly today.
Yeah, definitely. Laws change, precedents are set, and society, like, our values change. It's a process. That's why it's so important to keep learning, especially for us legal folks.
Speaking of learning, are there any, like, resources or specific areas of law you'd recommend our listeners check out if they found these cases interesting?
Oh, for sure. If you're into the whole causation debate, the model penal code, how they approach causation, that's a good one. It's way more nuanced than the traditional common law view.
How so? What's different about it?
Well, the model penal code gets that real life isn't just a but-for situation, you know? It says that lots of things can contribute to a result, and it tries to be fair about who's responsible, you know, looking at the big picture.
So it's less about this rigid link between an action and what happened and more about, like, the context.
Exactly. And if evidence is your thing, the federal rules of evidence, specifically Rule 403, that's worth a look. It's all about balancing how useful evidence is versus how much it might prejudice the jury, which, like we saw in Oxendine and Spence, super important for a fair trial.
So those are the places to go if you want to learn more about how courts decide what evidence is fair game.
Exactly. It's the foundation of the whole justice system.
I think these two Oxendine cases, they're like a glimpse into this big conversation about justice, holding people accountable and making the legal system better.
Yeah, totally. They remind us that the law isn't just like rules in a book. It changes and grows. It reflects how we think about fairness.
And that means we all got to stay engaged, informed, right?
Absolutely. Ask questions, challenge what you think you know, and hold the system accountable for being fair and just.
So to all our listeners out there, don't be afraid to question, to dig deeper, and to, you know, really think about how the legal system works. Because even cases that seem simple, like these Oxendine cases, they can have these super complex legal issues hidden inside.
And figuring those out, that's how we make a more just world for everyone.